Welcome to the Founders Odyssey podcast. The journey of a founder is unlike any other. The chips are seemingly stacked against you as an entrepreneur, but the burning desire to revolutionize the world and leave a lasting impact is stronger now than ever with many founders. Our podcast looks to inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs to pursue their next great idea, educate them on how to make this impossibility a reality, and create a supportive group of entrepreneurs who are there for their fellow founders. Our podcast features only the highest performing entrepreneurs who have bootstrapped, raised funds, built companies, sold companies, and have experienced life-altering challenges and some significant triumphs. Join us on this journey with the Founders Odyssey podcast and listen in on this upcoming episode. Welcome to the Founders Odyssey podcast, where we create an environment for founders to thrive through education, inspiration, and a supportive community. My name is Nathan Bird, and I will be your host. We are joined today by international bestseller, serial entrepreneur, U.S. Marine Corps veteran, and host of the Warrior's Voice podcast, Zachary Green. Zachary has previous experience of growing his company from the trunk of his car to a $30 million business and has recently published his book, Warrior Entrepreneur, that launched to international bestseller status in just a few of their first weeks of launch. His passion for sales, leadership, mindset development, and team development has set him up to now mentor, advise, and speak about developing culture and scaling businesses. Join us today as we dive deep into conversation with Zachary Green. Thank you and welcome to the Founders Odyssey podcast, Zach.
Thank you, Nathan. I'm so excited. I've been a big fan of yours for quite some time, so it's a real honor to be a guest on the show today.
I appreciate it, man, and welcome, and let's just dive into it. I think there's always the question, you know, who are you? Where have you been and how did you get started? So let's touch on, you know, who's Zachary Green and what really has inspired you to be in this world of business, a world where it's challenging, but you have chosen to rise above.
So, you know, I grew up in Cincinnati, had a lot of struggles growing up, really bad ADHD. I went to probably six different schools from kindergarten to high school, Montessori school, Catholic school, private school, public school. And, you know, it's funny because ADHD is considered a disability, but when you get out of school, it's called multitasking. And then they say, oh, this guy's a great multitasker and he's so energetic and he can do all this stuff. So I really felt not very confident in myself. I knew I had greatness ahead of me, but so many people kept telling me I wasn't going to be successful. And, it grinds you down for a while, especially as a young kid. So I had a dream early on that I wanted to join the Marine Corps, and it was not just patriotic, but just specific to the Marines. And when I turned 18, I ended up down at Parris Island. It was a horrible, very difficult several months, and I really learned that warrior's journey that we'll talk about here shortly. From my time in the Marine Corps, I got out in 99. 2 years later, September 11th happened, so I really felt guilty and wanted to try to find a way to give back to our country and serve. And obviously the battlefield is no longer in a far off distant land. It's in our backyards now. And my full-time job was at Eli Lilly. I was in brand development and marketing and, you know, learning how to, you know, solve problems through marketing rather than just focus on features and benefits. And when I started out as a firefighter, I got lost in a fire and it was a really scary situation. And what I learned at Lilly was we didn't really focus on the chemicals that are in the drug. What we focus on, here's a problem, diabetes, depression, whatever. And then here's the solution with our brand. And we try to match that brand up to the problems people are having. So for me, the problem I identified was, hey, when it's dark, you get disoriented, you get lost, things happen. And the solution I came up with was using this high output glow in the dark material to help firefighters see each other. Started selling it out of the trunk of my car, made about $5,000 over a 6 month time period. Eventually quit my job at Lilly, went to this big trade show. And in 3 days, I booked $100,000 in business. Now, the problem was, is I had no money to buy the raw materials. I had no production capability to produce that. I had no way to distribute it and package it. But I'm a Marine, and we accomplish our mission no matter what happens. I ended up refinancing my home, maxing out my credit cards, borrowing against my 401k. But, you know, over the next couple of years, we turned it into about a $30 million company. So that's the good side. The bad thing is it was very difficult in between. A lot of ups and downs.
Let's go through that journey. Let's go through that journey a little bit, because, you know, there's a lot to unpack there, and there's a lot of years to unpack. There's a lot of, you know, struggling nights to unpack. And there's a lot of, really, there's a lot of innovation, though, that comes into play when you have something like that happen. And when you see a market, right, an entry into the market, and you noticed, and as well experienced a problem, right? And you wanted to address that problem. So let's go back into that innovation. And then if we're speaking to those founders out there today that are trying to identify problems, let's try to speak to those individuals, right? When they're first beginning their business, or when they already have a business and they need to, you know, do a course correction, how would you go about suggesting to do that?
So I always go back to the basics and the fundamentals. And for me, it's real simple. It's three questions that all entrepreneurs have to ask themselves, even if they're in the concept phase, if they're in the beta phase, or if they've actually now started to produce and create revenue and profit, hopefully. So the three parts, the three legs of the stool, again, if you only have two legs of a three-legged stool, it's going to fall over. Number one, have you solved a problem in a unique and elegant way? At the end of the day, entrepreneurship is about fixing stuff. It's about solving a problem. Now, the problem could be I'm thirsty and I need a beer. The problem could be, hey, I've got this Excel spreadsheet and it's super complicated. And the solution would be, hey, I've got an app that we can integrate it with Siri and have you talk to it and it fills it out. So that's the easy thing, is solving the problem. Now, this is the next two is where it gets a little more challenging. Number two, what is your unfair business advantage? I didn't say illegal, I didn't say unethical, but you have to have an unfair advantage. We are all Davids and Goliaths are the big companies that are out there. And if you remember back to Sunday school, the first thing Goliath said to David was, come to me. Now, had David come to Goliath, Goliath would have ripped him apart. So the first thing is you work on your strategy, not what the big companies say that their strategy is. Apple is definitely the Goliath that's out there. They have very strong restrictions that you do this and do that. Come up with a new game. You know, try to create something different. I love the quote from Jerry Garcia where he said, we don't want to be the best. We want to be the only ones to do what we do. And because of that, that gives you. So what is that unfair advantage? It could be, hey, you invented this special type of coffee, paper coffee that cup that keeps your coffee warm. And the unfair advantage is you sell to Starbucks and they do a 1-year exclusive where no one else can have it other than you. My case, my unfair advantage was I made a decision early on. I wasn't going to outsource sales. I was going to keep it organic in-house. And I was only going to have firefighters be my sales team. So that way we'd have firefighters selling to other brother firefighters. Then that brings us to the third point. This is usually where most businesses fail. You have to have kick-ass sales, marketing, and distribution. So many entrepreneurs are so worried that someone's going to steal their idea. They spend the most precious asset they have, which is cash, outside of their time, precious asset. And they try to protect their idea. And they're so scared of someone finding out about it that they fail in getting it distributed and people know about it. My thing is, let them copy it. Because if it's a good idea, you're going to have other people copy it. That's just second nature. But you're going to be more innovative than them. You're going to create new different ideations and bring it out there. If you can't distribute it, people can't find out about it, you're never going to be successful. And again, a great idea that no one knows about is just that. Now, the opposite is true also. You can take a crappy idea, a crappy product, but put good sales and marketing behind it, people could buy a lot of it. Back in the 80s, there was a guy named Gary Dahl, an advertiser. He created the Pet Rock. It was a freaking rock. It sold millions of dollars because it was at every cash register checkout. They had commercials. They had great packaging and branding behind that. And the guy literally just went out and got a bunch of rocks and put them in a box. Bottled water. The reason bottled water is successful is one reason only: distribution. Both the bottled water companies, Dasani and the other one, are all owned by Pepsi and Coke. So they can use the distribution channel that they already have. So again, to recap, solve a problem in a unique and elegant way, unfair competitive business advantage, kick-ass sales, marketing, and distribution.
You know, I love the way that you just easily outlined that. You know, some of the people I've had on there, they kind of go all around a circle, and you're very succinct with your answers. So that's perfect. So let's go through distribution and how you were able to really distribute your product when you had developed it. And I know you said you went to a trade show, but now let's go through the cycle of progression and how there was a maturation in your business and how your distribution strategies changed, because there are people that are listening that will have maturations of their business.
So for me, my ultimate goal was exit signs, not firefighters. Now, I did the firefighters first, number one, because they're my brother and sisters, and ultimately it was saving my life too. But I wanted to have the firefighters help me establish brand credibility and brand strength. I wanted to raise venture capital. I ended up raising about $4 or $5 million in venture capital financing. And but you had to have some momentum. Rarely are those angels going to give you money if you just have an idea on the back of a paper. They want to show that something's happening, and they want to see that you've invested some of your own money and bootstrapped it, which I did. So once I was able to get that beachhead strategy and really start to build things up, we ended up with close to 100,000 firefighters using our brand. Then we went out to the exit signs, and the exit signs, there's 100 million exit signs in the United States. They all need batteries, light bulbs, and electricity. But there's a loophole in the code that allows you to use this glow-in-the-dark material, and you can actually replace the exit signs and not have any electricity or batteries. And that's what we're able to really build that out. So what I always tell people is, don't think what's the next step. Think 4 or 5 steps ahead of you, and what do you need to do to build that up? So let's say you've got a software application, a SaaS system, it's some type of, let's call it a app that's on your phone. Well, rather than just starting with that, the first thing you want to do is figure out who's your customer going to be. How can you start to seed that market and start to build things out through maybe blogging or social media posts or podcasts or something like that to really identify there's a problem? Start to capture email, start to be able to build up this database, get your beta group out there that can start testing, and then you launch your product. Rather than most people are just going to launch a product right over. So take your time, be meticulous, and build that strategy up. I keep going back to the whole David and Goliath thing. You're not going to just use a ton of money and a ton of people to muscle your way into the market. Entrepreneurs don't have that capability. You need the strategy. And sometimes that strategy is taking 2 or 3 steps to the left or the right, or even backwards, to be able to get to where you ultimately want to go.
Let's talk about joint ventures. Let's talk about partnerships. Let's talk about strategy and how you really develop those strategic alliances. Because, you know, I think that's another form of distribution, right? Through partnerships and through these strategic alliances. And, you know, who do you look for, I guess, not only personally in a strategic alliance, but also from a business standpoint? Who do you look for?
So one of my favorite stories was about Peter Thiel and Elon Musk. They were bitter rivals with each other when they had PayPal and another one. And they were looking at suing each other and all this stuff. And it was starting to get pretty heated. And the two of them decided they were going to just meet for coffee. And by the time they finished that coffee, they got rid of both companies, created PayPal, and the rest is history. Always, always, always partner if you can. Never fight. And I've been guilty of that. I've sent plenty of cease and desist letters. I've sued people. People have sued me. And at the end of the day, the only winners are the attorneys. Had I been less arrogant and less bullheaded, I probably would have approached them and try to find a common ground in some type of way, because every business has the capability of having that synergy that's out there. So when you're sitting in that incubator, you're sitting in that business development area, and you see someone else and you find out they're working on a very similar project to you, rather than getting mad and slashing their tires or trying to sabotage them or talking trash behind their back, sit down and see what you guys have together, because I'm a big fan of 1 + 1 = 3. And the reason why is if you've got two people that are working together, but they have different skill sets, they have different ways to put together, it's not just yours plus them. You bring this third component into it, which is fixing the solution that you don't have and giving you that ability. So now you're getting their power and your power. But when the two of you guys come together and you can really build that partnership up, a perfect example of this would have been the McDonald brothers and Roy Kroc. The McDonald brothers created this incredible opportunity of cheeseburgers that they wrapped in paper and were able to have people take them out and go. But it wasn't until Roy Kroc came along that he said, let's document this and let's put this down, because he was so analytical and so focused. And then they created this binder and they called it a franchise, and they started selling the binder, not the cheeseburgers. The two of those together is what really cost us to be incredible. And the great book out there right now is called Rocket Fuel by Gino Wickman. And it really talks about the importance of having a founder that's visionary and inspirational, partnered with an integrator that is very detailed and focused.
That is great. I've got another question for you. You keep on bringing up these great questions. And look, I haven't written any of these down. Keep in mind, I'm just having fun with this conversation, man. We've got some things that you've said. You said partnerships, very important. If I would have just not been so boneheaded, or if I would have not been kind of the area or a problem, then it may have been a better situation. So for those out there, let's speak to them about how you personally actually got through and developed a better you through those experiences, to where now you can be a joy to work with. Not saying that you weren't in the past, but how have you bettered yourself, and has there been a process?
Yeah, I mean, there's this evolution of maturity and learning what works and what doesn't work. I also think the environment made a difference. So for me, my journey was, the company was doing okay. We were starting to really move forward, but we got to a point where we eventually ran out of money. And, I talk about that in the warrior's journey, that you have the resistance and the challenges, the warriors getting tested, iron sharpens iron, the whole concept of developing rhino skin. But then you get to a point where you have your crucible, and the crucible is that crisis in your life, that monumental point that is so significant. And whatever you've done up to that point, you can't quite get through it. So in the crucible, the bottom of the crucible is the abyss, and the abyss is where failure and darkness and death and destruction lie. The crucible could be a bad relationship. It could be a drug or alcohol problem. It could be, in my case, a business failure. And to get through that crucible, first of all, you don't want to spend too much time at the abyss. As the great philosopher Nietzsche once said, if you stare long enough into the abyss, eventually the abyss will stare back and consume you. So first of all, recognize the abyss is there, honor the abyss, give it the respect it deserves. Just as a dangerous animal, you give it respect and you recognize it, but avoid it. Don't go poking the bear, so to speak. To get through that crucible, you have to do two things. You have to conquer and you have to transform. You can't just survive the crucible. You have to destroy it. You have to conquer it. You have to be that warrior to get past that point so it never happens again. The second thing you need to do, which really gets to the heart of the question you just asked me, is you have to transform and change. Because if you can't transform and change, you're going to get sucked right back to where you were before. And for me, my transformation was I stepped down as CEO of the company I started, and I hired another CEO because I recognized that I was so focused on just making the business survive and getting from one payroll to the next payroll that I lost track of, how am I going to focus on collections? How am I going to focus on new products and development? And when I finally was able to make that transformation and conquer those challenges, which included firing a lot of my employees and doing a major reshuffling, reorganization, working really tightly with my investors to help me along the process with that, then I no longer was the point that was stopping the company from success. I opened that up to a very professional team of new managers. And now the company has absolutely just flourished as a result of that. So to answer your question, I had to go through the challenge. I had to go through the adversity. I had to get to the point where the abyss was staring me in the face. Because when you're faced with a crisis like that, all options are on the table. You never would look at those options unless you're in that crisis. Never in a million years would I even dream of stepping down as CEO of the company I started until I was in that crisis and had to see those things.
Well, and it's got to be something that you're proud of, you know, still being a founder, still having taken it to where it needed to be, and as well stepping down for it to even flourish more, you know, to give it the fresh life, the fresh innovation, as well as you could on the outside be doing more things. You know, I'm sure you know, you have a hand still and maybe strategic alliances, right, within the industry, but I'm sure, you know, you're excited to see where it's going, and it sounds like it's going pretty well. So let's dive into your book and let's talk a little bit about the warrior entrepreneur and, you know, what is the entrepreneur and then what is the warrior entrepreneur?
Yeah. So what I wanted to do was create basically an autobiography. And as I started talking to my editor, he's like, look, I'm sorry, but unless your name's Oprah Winfrey or Elton John, nobody wants to read your autobiography other than your mom and your wife and those other people. So then at that point in time, I decided, he said, well, what is the story you can tell? And I looked back at what made me who I am today. And it was that warrior's journey. And so I started to really unpack those lessons, the common threads that I learned in the Marines, in the fire service: tenacity, grit, adaptability, courage, teamwork, serenity, all these things. And the more I started to look at it, I started to interview not only entrepreneurs, but also warriors. Now, these could be a professor that talked about the ancient Spartans or Romans. It could be maybe talking about a current day Navy SEAL and the operation they went through. And I found the common threads. And then I interviewed a bunch of entrepreneurs, both living and researched some that have gone before us, like Thomas Edison and Walt Disney. They were all the same thing. It was all about this conflict and that struggle that prepared them for that crucible and how they overcame it and how they conquered it and became better as a result of that. So that's really what the book is about. The book was originally supposed to be written just for veterans that were getting out of the military that wanted to start their business. And now it's not even focused on entrepreneurs. I wish I would not have even used the title entrepreneur now, because I don't want it to be narrow. It's for anybody in their life that is having struggle and hardship and wants to conquer that and use that as a badge of honor and something that they're proud of that makes them better as a result of that. Because we think a lot as when you have those hardships that makes you weaker. It doesn't. It's interesting. When I was in recruit training boot camp, Paris Island, toughest 3 months of my entire life, arguably the toughest recruit training of any branch of the service. The kids that grew up in the projects, that grew up in the coal mines, that grew up in the slums, if you will, that really struggled, that didn't have three meals a day, they didn't have a whole lot of problem with recruit training. It was people like myself that had wealthy parents that had everything given to me in my life. I struggled because I hadn't developed that rhino skin. And these kids, for them, they had three meals a day and they had a nice place they could sleep and they weren't getting shot at on their way to school every day. They were like, hell, this is fantastic. So it's, again, that's what this book is about, is using that adversity and challenge to help you grow and prosper in life.
You know, and there's so many areas in life that, you know, you can grow. And it's really just about having that growth mindset as opposed to a fixed mindset. And, you know, let's talk a little bit about that and how, you know, in maybe life, you've had a fixed mindset and then you had to then transfer into a growth mindset. Can you recall any times that you may have been a little fixed, but needed to have that growth mindset enter in?
That's a great question. I don't know if I can answer it directly. I think I've always been the kind of person that focuses on doing things a little bit better, going a little bit further and harder. I've never been comfortable with the status quo. The other thing with me, and I think you see this with a lot of warriors, I don't get excited when I win. I expect to win. But when I fail, it affects me drastically, viscerally, because I don't get excited to succeed because I'm a Marine and I always accomplish my mission. But when I don't, it's very difficult for me. Very significant fear of rejection, very significant concerns around that. And I think you find that with a lot of entrepreneurs is that they expect to be victorious because of their background. And when they're not victorious, it affects them very, very deeply.
In what ways, you know, throughout that process, obviously you've gotten to know yourself a little bit better, but, you know, I'm sure there's ways that you have matured in. You've been able to take those failures with a little bit more, you know, it's an opportunity to learn. I know I had another, actually, if you haven't listened, go listen to Rajesh Sethi, one of our previous episodes. He talked about failure as a gift, you know, and there's only gifts. And then he said that there was something else he said, but you guys got to listen to it. But
I love
how,
that.
When you're at that, you know, kind of that precipice, you know, how have you transformed in that time, you know, getting to know yourself a little bit better when you're going through that failure, and as opposed to taking it to where it's such a hard hit?
You know, you can't affect what happens to you. You can only affect how you react to it. Bad things happen. All entrepreneurs are going to face crisis and challenges. Nothing ever works the way it's supposed to. The great philosopher Mike Tyson once said, everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the face. Well, that's the way it works with that. So the question that becomes is, how much grit do you have? How much do you want that goal? And how hard are you willing to work for it? I think to answer your question the most simply is, when those things happen, you tend to see clarity. And this concept of chaos, where people try to put chaos in order and they try to organize chaos, you can't put chaos in order. There is a beauty to the chaos. There is a algorithm to the way the chaos works. And until you embrace that chaos, you're never going to be successful if you try to fight it and to organize it. The example I use is, if you've got a wave that's crashing in on you and you're on a surfboard, if you try to organize that wave and find a way to channel that water energy around, it's never going to work. But if you embrace the wave, and you don't know which way that wave is going to break or how it's going to come out until it happens, because a big wind could come in and push it off here, or there could be an undertow that you don't know about, and you ride that wave, that's when things happen. So I think the common thing you see with warriors and entrepreneurs is their ability to function calmly and organized in that chaos. And the organization is not linear. The organization is letting whatever flies at you and you're like, great, I'm going to move on. And you need a team around you to do that. That's not something the individual can usually do.
Yeah, that's good. That'll transition us nicely into our next section here, where, you know, you've built this company up and you've got it to a point where, you know, you had to place different team members. And like you said, you actually had to fire some too. But let's dive into culture and how you developed your team. And, you know, and you had to ride that wave of, you know, of tumultuous times, right? But you still came out on top. So how did you build that team and the culture?
So culture is interesting because I don't know if you can build culture. Culture just kind of is there and you try to find people that match that culture. As the founder, as the visionary, that's the most important job you have is culture. And when you hire and fire people, you should be hiring and fire them more on culture than on talent. And a lot of people disagree with me on that, but a lot of times you can teach people how to do certain things. You can't teach them culture. And the example I use is you have a sales rep that is so talented. These guys can close anything, but they're a freaking cancer to the organization. They're negative. They disrespect the leadership. They don't show up on time. They don't complete their expense reports. And so even though they have the talent, they don't fit into the culture of your organization. And that's somebody that shouldn't be part of that organization. So that's the first step, is establishing that culture. The next step is about personnel. Now, it's tricky because when you start off in a business, you don't have the money to get those A-level players that you need. So you end up getting this kind of ragtag group of the bad news bears. Lots of heart, lots of hustle, but not a whole lot of skill. And the challenge is the people that started the business with you usually aren't going to be the people that are going to make it through to that next level. And it hurts your feelings because they're like, but I was here. I started with you. It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, mission accomplishment comes before troop welfare. I've had to fire and sue friends, family members, people that became friends, because that wasn't the right thing for the business. Matter of fact, I had one of my very senior executives got sick, and we had to let him go because his illness was eventually affecting his job performance. And he asked me, he's like, please don't let me go. I'm like, I'll keep you as long as you can. But the second you start hurting the business, it's strictly, you know, they say it's not show friends, it's show business. And that's what you got to get through. So as you start to hire, there's this concept in statistics called regression to the mean, which means if you have people that are really good and people that are really bad, eventually they're all going to kind of work in. If you got people that are really bad and you got one or two people that are really good, they're going to all get pulled down very quickly. Because again, the mean, the average. So what I've done is the benchmark I use is I'm only going to hire people once I got enough money together that are better than me. Because I want to be the dumbest guy when I walk into my executive meetings, and I am. And well, first of all, it's not too difficult because I'm a Marine. But second of all, it's shown that I've done a great job of building a culture to attract and keep these people, but having that skill that they're going to lift everybody else up around you. But it doesn't happen overnight.
You know, and that's another thing. I'd love to touch on that. Thinking that you're going to get to the mountaintop in one jump or in one step. You know, how do you go and take and build something from a one-step approach? You know, because sometimes, you know, even for myself, I'll raise my hand and be that person and say, I see the vision and I see it 5 years from now. And I'm like, maybe even 10. So I'm living in the future. And then, wait, I've got to focus on what the present is as well. So, you know, is there a way that you go about to, you know, see the future, but then get to work on the present? Is there a way that you develop?
I mean, what you nailed there, that's founder 101, CEO 101, is constantly having the strategic play with the tactical play. So in the military, the strategy is, hey, we've got to take over, eliminate ISIS. We've got to get Saddam out of power. We've got to stop the Vietnamese communists from taking over the country. So that's the big term. And then you got, okay, well, how are we going to do that? We're going to have to break this down step by step. Do we have the right people? Do we have the right tools? Are we using the right tactics? You know, some of the tactics may be very difficult. Some of the tactics may involve this, that, or the other. Sometimes we're going to start to lose a lot of life, and we're going to start to get public opinions against us. And we eventually could lose our political support because now all of a sudden it becomes not a political issue. Those are all parts of the process that as an entrepreneur you have to think about. So the first thing is what is your goal? I think when you're doing planning, you have to start with a 10-year goal. Don't start with a 1-year goal. 10-year goal, where do you see yourself? Then you go to the 5-year goal. Then you go to the 3-year goal. And the 3-year goal is the first time you can really start putting numbers to what that dream is going to be. So at 3 years, you should have a good idea of what your revenue is, approximately what your profit is, maybe have some good KPIs and performance measurements around, you know, sales or certain things. Then you back it down to the 1-year goal, which is where you see yourself, you know, this time next year. Then you go down to the 3-month goals. And that's really the basis of your business, is those 3-month goals, those important missions that you have to accomplish every 3 months that are very real. And as you start to break it down from that, you still got that long-term 10-year goal that's out there, but you've broken it down into these small size pieces that make it a lot easier to start to put all that together.
You know, it's really easy how you put it all together. I mean, hey, do you want to just help work with me? No, I like it. I like it. I appreciate you spelling it out for everybody out there. And then let's turn it to you right now. And what are you most excited about? And what are some of the long-term goals that you've established? And then how you're going to work back from that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm excited right now of this new chapter in my life that was really brought on by COVID. The opportunity to not have to be on an airplane 150 nights a year like I have been for the last 10 years, the ability to spend more time with my family in this beautiful area that we've just moved down to. But I have a big hole in my heart right now. I've got a big gap, and that is I need that mission. I need my why back. And my why really at this point is not about me personally. I feel I've been very successful and accomplished the goals that I've wanted to, but I want to help others. And that's why I reached out to you. And that's why I'm so privileged to be on your podcast today and talk to your subscribers and guests that are out here. What I want to do is start a movement, and I want to create this process that's going to be based off of the Warrior. So it's Warrior Enterprises. That's going to include online training. It's going to include one-on-one coaching with me, group coaching, seminars, workbooks. And my goal is to take someone that has an idea, teach them how to make it a viable idea, teach them how to pitch that idea to investors and put together actual investor pitch decks. I want to be able to help them put together a business plan. And then I want to help them grow their company. So you could be a small business owner that's got a company and just hasn't quite gotten to where you want to, and we can help you scale it up from there. And that's really what my focus is. So between the book, the podcast, obviously, and then within the next month or two, we're going to start launching the online training portion of this program. And we are absolutely looking for beta testers right now. My goal is to find a group of about 10 or 20 beta testers. We'll give you a deep discount for the program, but we are going to ask a lot of you. We want you to really give us the feedback and let us know if this is the way that it's going and the right way to do that. All this can be found on my website, which is warriorentrepreneurbook.com. And also you can buy my book from that website. If you use the coupon code podcast2021, you can actually get 50% off on the book, and I'm more than happy to autograph and personalize it for you. But again, warriorentrepreneurbook.com, go down to the contact us section at the bottom, and we'll add you to our database and let you know when we launch this. And then you can always email me directly. I respond to every single email I get, and that is ZacharyLGreen@gmail.com.
Perfect. Perfect plug, man. Shoot. I don't have to say anything. You've been doing the sales and marketing for longer than I have. So
all my life.
I love it. I love it. And then, see, that's what it's about, because founders helping founders. And that's what that's what we're building here too. It's just, how can we synergistically work together with people that have missions that really ultimately are helping others, be better in life, right? You're helping people grow their business, which therefore grows their overall earning potential, which then could impact their family, their generations to come. So, I think what you have, what your thoughts process is right now, the area that you're at in life, I applaud you, and, keep doing what you're doing. And once again, I just want to say thank you today for being able to set aside some time and join us on the Founders Odyssey podcast.
Well, thank you so much, Nathan. And, I've had some great mentors that have helped me, and I'm a firm believer of paying it forward. And I just simply ask to anybody, if you found something today that you think is valuable, share it with somebody else. We're all in this together. And the entrepreneur community is the backbone of our country. What makes us America so exceptional and great is the fact that anybody can do anything if they really put their mind to it.
Awesome. Well, thanks a lot. Once again, my name is Nathan Bird with the Founders Odyssey podcast, where we help to create and inspire and create an amazing community for all of you founders out there. Thank you.